Well, Dottie Pepper won 17 times on the LPGA Tour, including a couple of major championships. She's been broadcasting the game now for more than 20 years. Hard to believe since she's only 42. Wrapping up the 2025 season with CBS last weekend at the Wyndham, it's a pleasure to welcome my friend Dottie Pepper back to the Augusta Golf Show. How are you, Dottie?
I'm a lot better now that I understand your mouth. That was fantastic.
Yeah, the nuns would be disappointed, but you know it is.
Yeah, you probably get your knuckles wrapped.
Yeah. Oh, I've had that done. Okay, scale of 1 to 10, and 11 is an acceptable answer. How happy are you that the season's over?
You know, is always a difficult question to answer because you've been going and going and going for so long and it takes a while to decompress. But physically and just travel wise, I'm like 11 out of 10. Ready for a break.
I get it. And that's perfectly acceptable. You might have a different opinion on this, but for the golf fan, it does seem like once we get to the Masters, and once the Masters is over, the rest of the year flies by. Does it feel any way like that to you?
For us, because of our schedule and the compression of it in the middle, mm-hmm. you know, we did 19 events. Mm-hmm. Four were on the West Coast, and those go by very quickly. You just get on a roll, and boom, you're done. And CBS switches back to being a basketball company. And then from the Masters through the PGA, that's some pretty heavy lifting. That's a lot. Two majors in 5 weeks. And then it seems like you're flying. So, yeah, part of what you said is absolutely true.
It seems like it for the fan. I mean, it just, you know, yeah. Do you like the major championships ending when they do in August? Well, in July, really.
Yeah, I do. I like the cadence of how it's now laid out with, you know, give the players in March to kind of give everything a softish start. And then, boom, you go into the Masters, the PGA, the U.S. Open, the Open Championship. And then before you know it, the playoffs are here. And then it's a kind of a you know, the fly through the fall to try to figure out the finality of what people's playing statuses will be. But I do like it. I like it a lot.
Would you have liked it as a player?
I think I would have, because it's very easy to build a schedule. Mm. You have your high points. You know where you want to peak. And it's not that if I've got time to recover or reset in between. It's not like you know, the LPGA schedule or seniors golf schedule, where there were times where they're playing two majors in 3 weeks, mm-hmm. or back to back. So if you didn't have it going, then you're really battling from behind for the rest of the year. Where this way, I think there's a really nice cadence to it.
I don't know if you do this sort of thing. It might be too early to do this sort of thing. But when you look back on the year, and I'm thinking of a particular day or two. Overriding memory. Would it be the Sunday here in April?
There were two Sundays.
Okay.
And that was the first of them, for certain. And that Sunday started with Rory surviving two doubles on Thursday to ultimately walk away 73 holes, a champion with a green jacket and a career Grand Slam. The other was this 5 minute, not even 5 minute window on Sunday of the PGA when Scottie Scheffler was leaking oil and John Rahm was making a lot of noise, making a move ahead. And it was the span of Scottie getting up and down out of the bunker at 10 at Quail Hollow for birdie and John Rahm missing a putt literally right behind the build out that's behind the 10th green at Quail. The 12th green was there, and that's where John Rahm missed, and the entire championship flipped. Exclamation point was the birdie at 14. When Rahm didn't take advantage of that, Scottie did, but it switched in a tiny little window late Sunday afternoon in that one little spot on the golf course.
Thinking of what Rory accomplished here in April, when you were playing, did you have a mountain like that? Did you have something you wanted to accomplish so bad, and did you do it?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't get to the ultimate, which would have been qualifying for the LPGA's Hall of Fame on points.
Mm.
But being Player of the Year in 92, that's a huge mountain. And I was 27 years old. And much like Rory, I wished I'd either been told I needed to take a break to appreciate it, or I just was inherently smart enough to know that I should be doing this. I should be taking a break to enjoy this and appreciate everything that went into getting to that little mini Mount Everest. That's a hard thing because you get tugged in a lot of directions to, well, you want to keep playing because you have the hot hand, but then there's other pulls from other places. And for me, it took another year before I finally pulled the plug and had a complete meltdown. And I'm glad to see that he's taking, he took that time leading into the Open at Port Rush, which was certainly so important to him. And then he, popped on a little holiday after that. I mean, I think that's so healthy.
We're talking with Dottie Pepper here on the Augusta Golf Show. So it sounds to me like you completely understood his attitude and his comments following the Masters.
Totally. And I think he said prior some time to think about it, he probably was the precursor. He was understanding the precursor to what Scotty said at the Open about, well, is that all there is? David Duvall went through it. I remember him telling, or Judy Rankin telling me the story of them being on a private plane from the Open when he won at Lytham, to a Monday night at Sherwood shootout early silly season event.
Mm.
So they're flying all night after he wins an Open Championship to go to LA and play in a made-for-TV event. And he literally said to her, is that all there is?
Why?
That's pretty tough stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm confused. Do you understand why there was any backlash at all as to what Scotty said? I thought it was wonderful.
I did too. I think it was people who said things about those comments were in a hurry to make a comment. I think they didn't fully understand the man and the people he's surrounded himself with and his ideals. And I think over time, hopefully people will, because he is so consistent and he lives what he says. It's sort of like Bernard Langer. I mean, you can criticize or not understand his faith and how he lives his life. But if you look at the way he actually lives his life, he lives what he talks. And you should always respect someone for that.
Fortune's nice. Fame is tough. Man, it ain't easy being famous. Even if you're a famous golfer, fame ain't easy.
No. I mean, the Chipotle comment, I think, was kind of encapsulated it all. If he's to go to the one closest to home, he really can't do that and just enjoy a meal with his friends or his family. But if he goes to one that's ways away, and I'm not going to tell you where it is, I can actually live like a real human being. Yay!
Would you want anything to do with that sort of life?
I like being able to, in this life that we live, I love being able to rise up to meet the occasion and then disappear back into a city of 28,000 people mm-hmm. and a cabin in the Adirondacks and be able to ski during the winter. And I love my quietness. I like to be able to rise to the occasion when my job asks of it, but I don't love to be in the spotlight all the time.
I get it. Scotty, let's talk a little bit about his golf. You had a front row seat to his play the last few years. What do you see? What do you like? What do you think when you see the way he's able to do this?
His teacher, Randy Smith, uses three words, and it happens every time, and it's rinse and repeat. It's from the way he prepares to go to tournaments. It's the way he warms up at tournaments. It's the way he is in the gym. The way he's constantly just reinforcing the fundamentals. It's just rinse and repeat. And he has his miss is a pull to the left. It's very rarely a bleed to the right. And he can self-diagnose really, really well. And I think it's been an absolute privilege to watch this. But I would say Saturday at Travelers, he played sloppy, awful round of golf. And he looked at me going up 18, and he just kind of raised his eyebrows and threw his hands up. Like, sometimes you just don't got it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's okay.
You know, you and I, despite your only being in your 40s, you and I were around for when all of the other golfers had to talk about Tiger and how he was playing and what he was doing. And we're kind of here again with all the other golfers talking about Scotty. How does this generation think about having to talk about somebody who's dominating them?
It is much the same. It's just more in the spotlight because there's so much more social media.
Mm.
And everything everybody says is captured in a clip and put on a reel. And you can watch it again and watch it again and watch it again. And they grab this little nugget and make a headline out of it. It is much the same. But the difference between the two is that for Tiger, it was always an outward grind. And Scotty, it's a quieter grind with more joy. Now, he's out there every bit as intense and focused as Tiger ever was. But there's a joy and a release to it that I don't think Tiger quite had.
Mm.
Maybe toward the end of his regular playing career, there started to be elements of that. I think as Charlie has come into his own with his game and his daughter has become such a beautiful young woman, maybe there's a more effusive joy. But there's an undercurrent of a grinding joy to Scottie Scheffler that's just different.
You know, you mentioned talking about Tiger, and I don't think I've ever asked you this question. It always made me crank my neck. I never understood how Tiger could show so much emotion out on the golf course when he was winning a golf tournament and then get in the media room and he was nonplussed. He was just, wait a minute, where was the guy that, you know, half an hour ago who was out on 18? He never let us see that, or I don't know if he didn't feel it then.
I think he was always so protective.
Mm.
I think he was always on guard. That somebody always wanted something from him and it wasn't genuine. I think my relationship with him has been absolutely fabulous. And he did something for me that was so personal, but calling a friend who was in a cancer battle. And I am 100% convinced that it kept her alive for another year. I just think he never let it down because he didn't want people constantly taking advantage of him.
It's a great story. Couple of other things. I'm not looking for your explanation, but what do you think? When you see the play of amateurs these days out there on the PGA Tour, whether it's Jackson Koivun, whether it's Luke Clanton, whoever it might be, how do you process that?
Better competition, better coaching, better equipment. Most of them are sport athletes coming up. Not many Scottie Schefflers that played three sports in high school or played on local amateur club teams or continue to play pickleball whenever he can get an opening. I think there's a focus on being that athlete early on, training, access to more tournaments, tournament setups have become more like PGA Tour events. So I think they're overall, there are less surprises when they get to the tour. I think that's a lot of it.
And you can't, it can't be a coincidence that we're seeing this, men and women, whether it's, you know, Lottie Woad or
right.
Rose Zhang or whomever. I mean, this is this is not a coincidence.
No. And there's, you know, there's consistencies across. Now there's more opportunities for girls to play more high-level events. I mean, look at the AJGA schedule for girls and boys is virtually identical. Same thing with now that they've gotten support from the state and regional golf associations. When you win, for example, the state junior in the state of New York, you're exempt into the U.S. juniors, U.S. junior girls. So I think that there's a lot less siloing going on so that there's more opportunities for the players to play against the top-notch competition on a more regular basis. And that's part of the equation that you're talking about.
And I assume you see this continuing.
I don't see any reason for it. Not if anything, probably more because of the PGA Tour U, the LPGA's equivalent. Now the U.S. Junior Development Program with the USGA, if anything, I think it probably gets a little more fire starter.
You played on 6 Solheim Cup teams. Should Keegan be a playing captain?
He absolutely should. He would rise to the occasion in both asks. He has 5 assistant captains and a manager. Lean on them. You get your work done as far as presentations, speeches, all of that done early. Manage your time. I think he does the cause disservice with his passion for the Ryder Cup to not be playing.
You know, you said something that made me smile. Ryder Cup. Captain's picks, looking for the hot player. Are there examples in your Solheim Cup years that a player maybe coming into the competition with less than their best would rise to the occasion for something like that? I just think that never gets taken into consideration.
I think a prime example was Pat Hurst in 1998. She didn't come into the matches at Muirfield Village playing particularly well. And she made a putt, I want to say it was Friday morning, on the 18th hole, about a 6-footer, and absolutely buried it to get a point. And it was like you could see that the switch had flipped, and she was phenomenal. Chris Johnson was another one of those players that seemingly came in not doing a whole lot, kind of milquetoasty, and just when she got the opportunity, she brought it. Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. And I think part of that is the captain's job to put them in the right atmosphere and put them in the right position in the lineup where they can thrive.
Before I let you go, I had Finchie on the show last week. Tell me your favorite Ian Baker Finch story, or one of them.
Oh, yeah, how many? Well, I think as a player for ABC, when I was nearing the last 4 or 5 years of my playing career, and I remember going to the tour championship at Daytona and hitting it great. I just come off a back injury that it chewed up a lot of my summer, but I was hitting it great and I could not make a putt to save my life. And Saturday morning, they were all out there, you know, doing their due diligence before the show. And I said, Finchie, would you mind? Because he was a neighbor in Florida. We played a little bit of golf, done some outings together, that sort of thing. I said, would you mind taking a look? And he said, yeah, of course. And in 5 minutes, you know, hitting a few putts on the putting green, I made a few, missed a few. And he said, look, there is absolutely nothing wrong with your stroke. But your eyes are all over like a strobe light. They're just dancing all over, following the putter head back and forth. He said, do me one simple thing and look at pick one dimple toward the top, the back of the ball, just somewhere, pick one dimple and purely focus on that and let your stroke come to it. Oh, okay. That seems pretty simple. And went out and ran the tables for the next 36 holes. Won the tournament. Last tournament I actually won on tour. He broadcast the way he talked and taught about the game. Very simple. Fundamentals. And very, very good. But as good as a broadcaster is, he's a better human being.
Let's come full circle. You mentioned a little bit. How do you spend the off season?
Just before getting on the show, I spent an hour in the garden fertilizing and deadheading, doing all that. So that is definitely part of my focus throughout the season, but even more so as the season ends. I feel like I'm not coming home to patch things up. I'm actually doing things to make things better for the end of the year and next year. I've got a few outings to do. I'm going to a college tournament over in Connecticut to speak with 100 and some odd collegiate young men later in September, or Ryder Cup corporate outing at some point. I'll go see family in Ohio during the month of October. Go see a good friend of ours, Josh Baldwin, perform in Canton, Ohio.
Okay.
We'll go my way back through and come home for the fall because it's upstate New York's a pretty magical place to live when the leaves start to turn. And then it's ski season. So part of my job is to continue to make this knee replacement sing so I can get back to doing what I love to do during the winter, and that's ski.
Good for you. Good for you. I know, 44th birthday coming up in a week or two?
Yeah, that's good math too.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm getting ready for a zero birthday.
I understand. I understand, youngster.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with that zero birthday. I really didn't have a problem with the one that ended in 5 until I started looking at Medicare. Then I was kind of like, you got my attention now.
I didn't really appreciate it when the AARP stuff started coming a few years ago. Now I get what you're saying about that 65 thing, though. I do have a little time. I'm at the bridge between the two.
She is Dottie Pepper, and she covers the game for CBS Sports, and she is very kind to say yes when I pick up the phone and ask her. Have a great offseason. It was a wonderful season. You were great. Thank you for saying yes to this.
Thank you. Well, we're part of a very driven and compassionate team. It's a privilege to be part of it.